In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Peace be with you.
And also with you.
My dear brothers and sisters in Christ, I'm very conscious of the great privilege we enjoy today in coming together to St. Paul's to celebrate this Mass during the Bishop's Ad Limina visit.
Bishops from across England and Wales are here in Rome this week, meeting with Pope Benedict, making a pilgrimage to the tombs of the Apostles, and visiting the various Vatican councils and congregations as part of their regular Ad Limina visits. Throughout the week, the Pope is meeting privately with small groups of church leaders from different parts of the country, listening carefully to their individual concerns before holding an audience with the entire Bishop's Conference and addressing a public message of encouragement, advice and support for their work.
There is in this country, I believe, an uncertainty that is surfacing, an uncertainty about what kind of a society we want to be. What are the real values that we want to pursue? What is the profound identity that we want to build up and sustain?
Archbishop Vincent Nichols of Westminster heads the Bishops' Conference. I spoke with him just ahead of the Ad Limina visit to find out more about the diverse and multicultural community that makes up the Catholic Church in Britain today.
I think that's a very fair opening comment. The research that was carried out recently indicated a greater diversity within the Catholic community and also an increase in numbers about which I don't think we were fully aware. I think we also recognize there's a very diverse pattern of practice of the faith according to different age groups, with older people more steady and younger people probably less regular, but no less fervent. And also, I think what is very prominent at the moment is that the life of the faith is probably a lot stronger in the major cities, where people tend to gravitate, than in the rural parts of the country, where numbers are down and priests are aging and there are real difficulties to face. I think also the research has shown us that Catholics, in comparison to the average population, are much more committed to causes that have at their center the principles of justice and social justice. And that is very encouraging for us because it indicates that in practice there is an expression of the Church's social teaching. And I think we have, you know, a whole number of success stories that we could speak of, as well as some of the difficulties that everybody will understand.
You mentioned the social justice focus of the Church. And of course, the Church in Britain runs a lot of charitable organisations, provides a lot of support for those on the margins of society. How much do you think this work is appreciated by society at large today?
Well, I think the work is appreciated, but I'm less convinced that it is always publicly associated with the Church in the common mind. And I think it's been quite a difficult call when we have seen a number of Catholic charities, if you like, lower the flag a little bit of their Catholic identity so as to perhaps more easily receive government funding and more easily recruit and more easily be in partnerships with people. I don't mean to say that they've changed their inspiration or, in fact, the kind of heartbeat of their work, but the profile of them being Catholic, as perhaps signaled in their name, is more subtle now. And I think that's an expression of some of the difficulties we face of bringing religious conviction into the public square.
Certainly, on the one hand, Britain is one of the most secularised societies in Europe. You recently said, I think, that the country has sold its soul to the pursuit of scientific knowledge and reason above all else. And yet somehow the popularity of some books and TV programs dealing with faith issues seems to indicate, on the contrary, a renewed interest in spirituality, at least. What is the church doing to respond to this perceived need, not necessarily for organized religion, but for spiritual values?
Well, I think, you know, British society is quite complex and quite subtle. The comments I made about selling our soul to positive knowledge was more to do with institutions than society as a whole. And I think key institutions, often universities and sometimes the whole of the apparatus of government and the preparation of legislation, almost exclusively concentrates on evidence and on pragmatic data. And I think that does not reflect the overall public mood. And there is in this country, I believe, an uncertainty that is surfacing, an uncertainty about what kind of a society we want to be. What are the real values that we want to pursue? What is the profound identity that we want to build up and sustain? And I sense a greater openness, just as you yourself say, towards things of religious belief as addressing that debate about certainty and uncertainty. Indeed, you know, religious belief actually helps us to live with uncertainty because it gives us that dimension of life, which is an openness towards the infinite and therefore a positive understanding that we do not know or control everything. Now, what do we try to do? We try to play our full part in these public debates. That means at times we have to speak with data at our fingertips, and we're good at that, for example, in the area of education. At times we have to try and enter a debate more from a rational point of view than from the point of view of faith. So that would be, for example, in the current debate on assisted suicide. And at other times, we just have to try and argue the role and the importance of religious faith in the public forum, which, for example, we are doing at the moment with regard to the equality bill. So there are different levels at which we have to operate.
Now, you mentioned also the key ethical questions such as assisted suicide and abortion and so on. The church's stance has been openly supported by other churches, other religious organisations in Britain, hasn't it? How well do you think this cooperation across the different faith groups works in getting a faith perspective heard in the public square?
It's important, and it's important that we keep trying. Clearly, our closest colleague in all of this is the Church of England, and we work very closely with the Church of England. So, for example, the submissions that we put in to the Director of Public Prosecution about assisted suicide were exactly along the same lines, but it was important that we put in separate contributions. On broader issues such as the adoption and suicide and the value of life, that partnership can go more broadly. And certainly in my experience in Birmingham, we work quite hard with leaders of some of the Muslims in Birmingham and some of the Jewish community and the Sikh community to speak with one voice on those things. That's a little more difficult in London because of the diversity of those different communities within themselves.
Regarding relations with the Anglican Church, now, of course, tensions were raised recently over the new apostolic constitution announced by the Vatican for former Anglicans. How have Catholics in Britain reacted to this initiative of the Holy Father?
Well, I think now the reaction to Anglicanorum Chaetibus is kind of measured. There was quite a lot of initial reactions, some of which was much exaggerated in the media. And now we're in a period of assessment and prayerful consideration, I would say. For our part, as a bishops' conference, we have a commission working on the steps that we might take and our openness and readiness. I know from some within the Anglican Communion in this country, they are taking their time as well. And they are using this period for prayerful reflection as to how they are going to react to the response given to the Holy Father of the approaches that had been made to him. I think it's important in assessing all of this to keep it together with the very important announcement of a new round of Anglican Roman Catholic International Commission talks. And I believe these two things are connected. I believe the response of the Holy Father to the approaches from Anglicans around the world gave a very positive stimulus to the program of Archic discussions. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Archic 3 is now coming online at the time when Anglicanorum Chaetibus was published. Indeed, in our joint statement, the Archbishop of Canterbury and I said that this step by the Holy See will bring to an end a period of uncertainty. And I think it has been a positive contribution to that broader dialogue between the Catholic Church and the Anglican Communion. And I think that will be reflected in this country as well.
Archbishop Vincent Nichols of Westminster there, speaking to me just before the start of his Ad Limina visit this week.
This is the time when you come to be affirmed by the Holy Father precisely in your responsibility to your local church.
That's Archbishop Patrick Kelly of Liverpool on the northwest coast of England, a city that in many ways exemplifies the challenges facing other northern dioceses. People there have been particularly hard hit by the recent recession, compounding job losses that have plagued such towns and cities for several decades. And yet, Archbishop Kelly suggests the faith remains vibrant and strong despite the difficulties he faces due to a declining Catholic population.
Because the story of our city, putting it very strongly, it's inseparable from the story of the slave trade. Liverpool was one of those ports which was part of the notorious triangle. The ships sailed from Africa to the Americas with slaves. They sailed back to the west coast of England with raw materials, and they sailed back to Africa with finished products. The raw materials they brought explained so much of the prosperity of Liverpool. There still stands, for which I'm grateful, a derelict tobacco leaf warehouse on the waterfront in Liverpool, unique in the sense that the floors are just high enough to hang a tobacco leaf. But it stands as a reminder that so much of the infrastructure of prosperity of Liverpool, which was once enormously rich, I think 80% of the world's trade once went through that port. Now it's all gone. And therefore demographic changes. There was a time when on the strip along the river there were 900,000 people. The total city now, that's four times that land area, is barely 440,000. I face the fact that many churches were built to cope with the demands of 900,000, many of whom were Catholics. I now face areas where there is no housing at all. And so the demographic question is very real, quite different from the south of England, which London still experiences immigration from many Catholic countries. We have hardly any at all. It's a painful reality, having to choose to close a church which has been loved. But amazingly, even today, when we've closed several, Archbishop Warlock closed some, I've closed others, there's still one parish priest who said, I can stand at one point in the parish and I'm within less than a mile of four other churches, with a total Catholic population in the area of perhaps 2,000 people.
And what is the feeling, the atmosphere amongst that Catholic population today?
Whenever a church is closed, there's always great sadness. But I always make a point of going to celebrate the final Mass. I don't run away from it. You must be there. And it's always sad, very sad. But at the same time, I find a bit of encouragement that I to do the same, and the same is many of the northern bishops are facing this. Bishop Arthur Roach in Leeds is facing it, Bishop Michael Campbell in Lancaster, Bishop Terry Brain in Salford, where I was before. And when I was in the middle of trying to review the Liverpool situation, I happened to visit Manchester, and I met with a group of parishioners in the area where I closed, I think, three churches. And it was, I thought, I must go and greet them. And they were having the meeting. And they said, oh, you're very welcome. And this lady said, well, I was one of those who fought against all the changes. I said, well, how are things now? She said, and I won't name the church. She said, when you were doing that, were you thinking of closing? And she mentioned two other churches at that time. I said, well, I was, really. She said, if I may give you advice, Archbishop, in future, if in doubt, just close them. She said, those two are now our problem. They saw that these were fragmenting what they could do. They were demanding resources. And so it's painful, but I get the feeling that it can liberate us, I think. But it's faced by many churches, not just the Catholic Church.
So a rapidly diminishing community, but the strength of faith is still there?
I think so. I mean, I think in a way the faith is one which has been tried very deeply. Again, there is huge poverty on all sorts of levels in our city. Cultural poverty is one of them, because there was a time when the notorious phrase by a minister said, well, if you can't find work in Liverpool, get on your bike and go. And it became notorious. And many people have had to get on their bikes and go.
So where do most of them go?
They head south. They head south. Most journeys head south. You know, London's population still increases. That's why I often say the main task I have is to sustain hope. And I love the city. I am passionately fond of it. Thanks be to God, a pure gift. And I really am. It's a city I love. And I think by hope I mean it is not serving the people to be what I call optimistic. Don't worry, it'll soon be all like it used to be. That's a lie, and it doesn't help. Hope says, together we can build what we need for the future. And I find it very moving now. I've been there 13 years, I think. It's a very simple thing, but it's an absolute delight. If I walk through the city streets, the number of people who know me and stop and talk is marvellous. It's like a big parish, but it's a city which is a bit special.
A city, as you say, which suffers, unlike in the past when it was so prosperous. It's a city with a lot of very serious social and economic problems, made worse by the recession.
Absolutely. And of course, I am very anxious that we all of us almost hold our breath. The minimum, when you think we've an election coming this summer, when you have a situation where the parties are almost vying with each other to be more ruthless in what they're threatening to cut back. Now, I remember no election like that anywhere. It means it's serious. When the parties are saying, vote for me because we will be more severe, usually vote for us because we'll give you more jam, it means it's very serious. So I think we're very wise to be very cautious, very prudent, almost still, and say we are going to face some very demanding times.
Are the bishops expecting to issue some kind of guidelines to people ahead of the elections?
We usually do before an election, but a very difficult one to do, because almost everything will be predicated on what funds are available. And I always think it is never wise of anybody to say, to promise things and then say, where's the money coming from? Unless you face that, you're not treating people seriously. So there are big issues, and it affects our city.
The church has a hugely important role to play, doesn't it, in supporting those who are left behind, who
Absolutely.
Are on the margins.
Yes,
who
and
are...
we've one of the largest social outreaches in the whole country, Nugent Care, founded by Father James Nugent. And what is wonderful, again, it's such a glorious story. Father Nugent, there's a statue to him raised by public subscription in the gardens of the town hall in Liverpool to a Catholic priest. Marvellous. I mean, it just says he is one of the great heroes. And if you then think that in the main street, Hope Street, between the two cathedrals, there's now a statue to my predecessor, Archbishop Warlock, and the Anglican Bishop, Bishop David Shepherd, by the city. And that's why I often say, what's this thing called secularisation everybody worries about? You say, but this is the honour of a city.
I was going to say, I mean, Britain is an increasingly secular country. It is a huge problem for the church in other places. Why is Liverpool perhaps so different?
I think the north of England may be that we've had to be there with the ordinary people in their trials and tribulation. They know that. And their leaders come from the same background. And, you know, for example, let's say the church is... You may know there's the new inquiry into the horrible tragedy of Hillsborough when hundreds of people
collapsed.
Died. Yes, the head of the new committee of inquiry is the Anglican bishop.
So very
That's
much part of the fabric of society.
Exactly, very much. And I have assured him of all the support I can give him, and we understand he'll demand a lot of time. And you know, all the church leaders together are saying thank you to him. And that's nobody said what a surprise.
You mentioned the legacy of Archbishop Warlock and
yes.
Archbishop Shepherd. I mean, it was a hard act to follow in many ways, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was. But I think, in a way, I was very blessed in small things. First of all, I was the first bishop from the north of England in Liverpool for quite a long time, and Liverpool people are Scousers, but the whole diocese is north, and so they were quite pleased, I think. And I was able to work with Bishop David Shepherd for a couple of years, and then when Bishop James came, it just flowed on, and we were both very clear that it was all the churches together, and I think we've done good things, and unveiling the statue was an affirmation of the journey continues.
What about the apostolic constitution that was announced by the Vatican for former Anglicans wishing to become Catholics? It caused tensions in some quarters. How did it affect you?
We've had some conversations, but no difficulty as far as I can see. It's not risen. Nobody's formally made approach to me about this. I think, again, because the whole context, Liverpool, again, was very different, and it has been mentioned in one or two conversations, but no more.
My thanks there to Archbishop Patrick Kelly of Liverpool, visiting the Vatican along with the other members of the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales.